So where is music journalism headed? One of my favourite things about music magazines is they often begin with the editor's letter. That slightly self-referential, slightly direct, slightly unnerving sometimes to think that someone has sat there and written you, the reader, a letter, and that you are entering into this community of other people who've also had this letter addressed to them. And I think to begin this series, season two of the Drown in Sound podcast, welcome, hello, I am back after a extended break. I'm Sean Adams, who founded Drown in Sound, so that would make sense that I'm hosting this podcast. Anyway, so that question I just posed before distracting myself with this noteless monologue to begin this podcast series. I decided that to celebrate 23 years of Drown in Sound, because it started in the year 2000 and that's how maths works, I would speak to various different people doing various different things to do with music writing, music journalism, music criticism, but also speak to a few people from outside of the traditional music industry. So, for instance, I've spoken to a tech reporter for NBC, and because technology overlaps with pretty much everything, she's reported on how Britney Spears and Kanye and various other stories like Marilyn Manson's court reporting have become tech stories as much as they become music stories. And I've done this series for a few reasons. One, it's a really good excuse to talk to people whose writing I love, to speak to people that I'm fascinated by what they do and how they survive and how they thrive and who they're writing for, why they started, all those kind of things. And also to reach out to some people that never really had an excuse to speak to. So for instance, I spoke to Emma, who started Fake DIY, or DIY Magazine as it's now known, and I've not really ever spoken to Emma for more than about 10 minutes at a gig and at a meeting about Camden Crawl Festival, and we had a really great chat about how she started, a lot of the similar challenges we've had, a lot of the similar journeys we've been on, how we've ended up both working with the same musician with the record labels that span off from our websites, and her passion for photography, which was really nice to discuss. I've also found myself kind of dipping into conversations with journalists that I know reasonably well their writing, but don't really know much about their purpose and backstory. I'm also going to speak to people about the business models around the creator economy or the attention economy. I've spoken to a TikToker whose TikToks I absolutely adore, and he's made an amazing, like, I think it's like a 10-minute TikTok about The Cure, which we talk about in that episode. So yeah, I'm not talking to a TikToker about like hip young cool music. He's just a hip young cool guy who's used TikTok in a really wonderful way. I've also spoken to people like Jimmy from Running Punks, who was in the band Future of the Left, which Drown in Sound massively championed. But his running reviews are some of my favorite things on the internet. They're just an utter joy to watch. And we spoke about his love of journalism, his love of like reading magazines when he was younger. And I think one of the things that's come through in most of the interviews I've done so far, and I'm only halfway through recording them all at the time of recording this introduction, one of the really big things that's come through is just how much the magazines that people read when they were growing up inspired them, gave them their passion for music, gave them their love of writing, led them down a path that they didn't expect, how certain shows and meeting certain artists have really changed their point and their purpose of why they're doing what they're doing. And it's given me a lot of food for thought. I'm currently at quite a big crossroads of, do I try and bring Drown in Sound back? What would that even look like? Would it be a website like it used to be, with 10 things posted every single day and 5 record reviews written by writers that I've not had any real input into what they've written? And sometimes that means that records I love get bad reviews, and other times it means that records I really don't like get really great reviews. And as an editor, should I just let all that stuff slide, allow people to be themselves, and then weirdly deal with the kickback going, you hate my favorite band? It's like, I don't. I really love that band, and you're having a go at me. Should reviews even matter anymore? And I think I might do a separate sub-monologue somewhere in this series about that, because I've got a lot of thoughts and we've touched on it in a few of the interviews so far. And I think that music media is at a real crossroads as well. Having released some records over the last few months, putting out singles by new artists, it's very different to it was 10, 15 years ago. There's not the same excited young person on the end of an email waiting to listen to as many new artists as they can every day. There are people that are dipping in for a few hours a week alongside their other jobs and their other commitments. There aren't the same places you can pitch for of one really great piece of coverage which is going to nudge the dial and be read by other journalists and read by radio and read by a lot of music fans. And I think more than anything, as a music fan, as a music consumer, as someone that's constantly seeking out new music to listen to, I find the current landscape a bit confusing. For instance, on Friday, every Friday on Drone and Sound, there's a thread with the community talking about what's out today. And I noticed a band called Sun June, whose last record I absolutely adored. They're like the perfect kind of mixture of the Shins and a slightly breezier, more Beach Boys-y take on that, but also with this slightly cool, kind of like Always kind of approach to things. Do you just pronounce their band name Always? I've never really decided what you do with those two V's. These are questions that I should ask myself before hitting record, but you're getting my unfiltered thoughts, you know, like a right-wing pundit that doesn't have really any filter anyway, but they still call their shows unfiltered. It's a whole other substrand of my consciousness that you're dipping into. But I think that there's been something odd that's happened with where we are with media and who it's for, why it's there, who it matters to, who it connects to. And I just think that I missed that Sun June record because I didn't see it come into my feed from the 50 plus music publications I follow. I follow the band on Instagram and Twitter and probably Facebook too, and I didn't see any posts about the album. But I hadn't really browsed around any music websites and seen the reviews either. So it just made me feel like I really love this band and they've got a record out and I should know, and something's broken if I don't even know they've got a record out. I don't even know if the record's good yet or not because I've been busy all weekend recording podcasts and not had a chance to listen to it yet. So that's going to be my treat to myself after I record this, and whilst I'm uploading it, I'm going to give it a really good listen. But I think that something is broken, that when you already love an act and you don't know they've got a record out, how are you going to connect to acts you've never heard of and don't have a connection to? How are you going to better understand and process all the music that comes out all the time? And I think that for me, music magazines gave me a portal into a world. It gave me a beginning of an education into music, a much, much better appreciation of why I love the things I love, why some people love records that don't make any sense to me and just don't connect to me, probably because they don't have a grain of melancholy in them, but that's just because I'm a miserable bastard. But I think that journalism has always been something that I have valued. And I think that one of the big questions I really want to understand is whether a lot of music writing is music journalism. Is it journalism on par with war reporting, on par with covering Me Too? Is there something missing from music writing where it's editorial about music, it's criticism of music, it's opinions about music, but there's not as much fact or seeking the truth? And that's possibly because music doesn't have a lot of truth, but the ecosystem around music does. And I think that there's a lot of bigger questions about music that I see discussed on forums and on social media, I didn't really see written about. I remember years and years ago, I had a conversation with Conor McNicholas, the editor of The Enemy, and we were discussing whether Spotify should have been on the cover of The Enemy, like Spotify was on par with the White Stripes or the Vines or any number of bands that have been on the cover of that magazine over the last, I forget how many decades, but most of them have been pictures of either Noel or Liam Gallagher every few weeks. And I don't think that will ever change, but they're hardly ever in print anymore. Apparently there is a new print version of The Enemy. That's a whole other topic, which I'm not really going to get into in this monologue or in the series. But yeah, I've found myself questioning why ideas and those bigger topics, which impact us all as music fans. Like, it's been interesting to see over the last few months the amount of coverage around the ticketing costs and charges and all the money that Ticketmaster take, and how the industry is not necessarily able to adapt to an industry and an economy that's needing more money, but also making record profits, but it's not feeding back into the grassroots. Had a really great conversation with Laura from The Big Issue, who's the culture editor there, about one of the campaigns they're running, which I'm really glad that I got to talk about with her, and hopefully you will learn about and understand why I think it's such an important campaign. So without further rambling, as I promised myself, this would be a 10-minute intro, and I've just glanced at the clock and it's 11 minutes. This is going to be a collection of interviews across a few weeks. Some of them I've already recorded, so they're going to come in the next few days, and some of them, and if you're listening to this months from now, then they'll all be there anyway. But I thought I'd change what I was doing with the podcast. I started it back in February whilst also trying to start a record label, whilst also doing a lot of consultancy work and managing artists and trying to tour manage whilst also doing lecturing, and my brain melted and I decided that the approach to the first season didn't quite work. I understood why the episodes were connected, because they were all about the foundations of the industry, and before I really dug in, really wanting to find whereabouts the ground was, trying to work out why AI is such a big topic, trying to figure out what the trade bodies and trade unions are doing to address streaming, to really help everyone else understand the conversations I'm having with my friends and peers and artists I work with and on the forums on Drowning Sound, and the conversations I have with myself a lot of the time about the existential crisis of the music industry, and also my second love, which is the media industry. So with everything being thrown under the content bus, where this podcast intro is on par in a database on a streaming service of your choice with some of the greatest albums of all time, it's definitely not up there with them. It is just a man and a microphone, and it's a nice fancy new microphone, and I think that I will hopefully make sense why I have chosen to dig in with the people I've chosen into the topics that we've discussed. Like any magazine, the editor's letter isn't going to give it all away. It's just a hello and welcome, and this is the Drowning Sound Podcast.